If he's still alive,
Abbott said in a stage whisper. It wasn't an official going-away party. No one planned it. The night before Brad was scheduled to go into isolation in preparation for his flight to Gamma's surface, he and Felicia went to dinner in the Crystal Palace, and in ones and twos, friends and acquaintances drifted into the restaurant and joined them. The sturdy little robot waiters dutifully pushed tables together and carried up chairs as the group grew. Larry Antermeyer was the first to come by, with Tifa Valente on his arm. "So, you go into solitary confinement tomorrow," he said as he sat on the chair one of the robots held for him. "It's not solitary," Brad corrected. "There'll be plenty of medical and engineering people in the isolation area with me." Tifa said nothing. She merely sat next to Larry, but kept her eyes on Brad. It made him uncomfortable. Brad had not told Felicia about Tifa's confession. Gregory Nyerere showed up with a Valkyrie-like blonde companion, tall, skin like ivory, full in the hips and bosom. Greg goes for large-sized women, Brad thought. "Bring your umbrella," Nyerere joked in his high-pitched voice. "I understand the weather's going to be rough." Brad nodded and smiled. His brows knitting, Nyerere said, "I understand that you'll have to wear a full bodysuit while you're down on the surface." "That's right." Glancing at the others around the still-growing table, Nyerere said, "This may be indelicate, but how will you, defecate?" Brad blinked once, twice, then replied, "Carefully." Isolation. "Time to test my comlink," Brad said. He and Felicia were sitting on the sofa in their sitting room. The impromptu going-away party in the Crystal Palace was long over. Tomorrow, Brad would go into the isolation area, and then, 3 days later, to the surface of planet Gamma. Felicia tried to smile and almost made it. "Comm crew," Brad called out, "please cut the link until daybreak tomorrow." Instantly, a voice in Brad's head replied, "Cutting link." "Thank you." No response. Doubtfully, Felicia whispered, "Do you think they've really cut it?" Brad nodded, then realized he hadn't spoken. "Yes, I'm sure it's okay." "You trust them?" "I have to." He got up from the sofa and held out his hand to Felicia. He realized she was trembling. "It'll be all right," he said, trying to sound reassuring. Her face blossomed into a genuine smile.
"Well, if they are watching, let's give them something worth looking at."
Brad grinned at her. "And listening to." Hand in hand, they walked to the bedroom. The chief engineer eyed Brad sourly and said, "Let's go through it one more time." Brad groaned inwardly. All morning long, they had made him go through the procedure for safely removing the defecation package without breaching the integrity of his biosuit. Now they stood facing each other, Brad encased in the specially designed suit, the chief engineer in rolled-up shirt sleeves and baggy shorts. "Didn't I get it right?" Brad asked. "One time out of three," said the chief engineer. "That means twice you got yourself killed." "Oh, it doesn't. Breaking the suit's integrity for a minute or so shouldn't be dangerous." The chief engineer gave the impression of being far larger than his actual physical size. He was swarthy, shaved bald with a stubbled jaw and narrow gray eyes. His normal expression, it seemed to Brad, was a disgusted scowl. Planting his thick-wristed fists on his hips, he countered, "And you've been on the planet's surface so many times that you know that for a fact?" Brad's chin drooped. "Okay," he said. "I'll do it again." The biosuit was necessary, everyone told him. But they didn't have to wear it, Brad thought resentfully. It was like trying to live inside a sarcophagus. The suit was stiff, it smelled faintly of plastic and lubricating oils. The helmet, shaped like a bullet to resemble the heads of the gamins, was made of one-way plastic glass. Brad could see out, but anyone outside could not see in, even through the two bulbous false eyes on each side. Brad went through the removal procedure again, feeling somewhere between indignant and embarrassed. The chief engineer actually smiled at him. "You got it right two times in a row," he said. "You might get through this after all." Before Brad could recover from his surprise and respond, the man demanded, "Now, what do you do with your package of shit?" Seal it, bury it, and make sure its transponder is emitting its signal so we can find it and return it to the ship when I leave the planet. The chief engineer nodded. Okay. Now we go through the feeding procedure. Brad had an urge to wash his hands first. The night before he would leave the orbiting starship, Brad called Felicia for the final time. How are you? She asked. Sitting on the edge of his cot in the isolation suite, glad to be out of his suit, Brad replied, I'm fine. Everything's going on schedule. How are you?
I miss you.
I miss you too, honey.
I wish I could sneak down there and go with you.
He laughed shakily. You could just about fit inside the suit with me. Kind of snug, though.
Snug is good, Felicia said.
He saw that she was struggling to keep a happy expression for him. When I get back, we'll spend a solid week alone, just the two of us.
That would be wonderful.
I love you, Phil.
I love you too, Brad.
She hesitated, then added,
Be careful down there. Come back to me safe and sound.
Sure, he said, trying to appear brave.
Sure,
she repeated dolefully. They chatted aimlessly until MC's soft voice interrupted. Curfew time, I'm afraid. Almost glad to end this increasingly painful farewell, Brad said to Felicia, I'll call you from down on the surface as soon as I get a chance.
Good night, Brad.
She was fighting to hold back tears, he realized. Good night, darling. He almost said goodbye. Departure. Sitting in the cramped control compartment of the shuttlecraft, Brad recalled from his childhood history lessons that the first astronauts, almost 300 years ago, were sometimes referred to as spam in a can. They were not actually piloting their spacecraft. They sat squeezed into the tight compartment while men on the ground controlled the flight. Spam in a can, Brad muttered to himself. He was a passenger, not a flyer. This mission to Gamma's surface was completely automated. If human piloting was required, the controllers aboard the starship would do it remotely. He had memorized the functions of the displays on the control panel in front of him, but he had no way of manipulating them except for the cameras that provided him outside views. So he sat, strapped firmly into the seat, in his biosuit, its helmet stowed safely in a rack to his left, watching, listening, feeling the little shuttlecraft coming to life. Internal power on, came the disembodied voice of one of the controllers. Life support on, a gurgling sound. Pumps on. A low moaning noise, swiftly ratcheting up to a shrill whine. Propulsion system on. A crisper, more authoritative voice called out. All systems active. All systems in the green, came the response. The synthesized voice of the countdown clock. Separation in 5 seconds. 4. Brad realized he was biting his lip. Deliberately, he opened his mouth and gulped in the cabin's canned air. 1. Separation sequence initiated. Brad felt a quiver, a shudder. The shuttlecraft was being nudged away from the starship. Good luck, Dr. McDaniels. He had to swallow twice before he could answer. Thanks. Separation successful. Main propulsion drive engagement in 10 seconds. Brad thought he should say something, make some sort of statement. This was an historic moment, after all. At least it was supposed to be. Running the tip of his tongue across his lips, he realized what he wanted to say. Felicia, I'll see you in 6 months. Not for history, for her. Main propulsion drive engaged. Brad felt a push against his back, gentle but insistent. You're on your way, Dr. McD. The display screen in the center of the control panel showed the Odysseus moving away. Within seconds, Brad could see the entire bulk of the mammoth starship. It was dwindling, faster and faster, getting smaller and smaller. Life support? One of the controllers asked. All systems green. Life support, Dr. McDaniels?
Everything normal, he reported.
Silence, except for the hum of the propulsion system. The display screen was peppered with stars now. Odysseus looked like a toy. He tapped the external camera control button on the armrest of his chair with a gloved finger. Planet Gamma filled the screen. A rich green from pole to pole, except for bony fingers of gray-brown rock mountains and a few glittering seas sprinkled here and there. Clean white clouds seemed to hug the landscape, like oversized sheep grazing in the meadows.
"Atmospheric entry in 1 minute," came the controller's voice.
Brad nodded tensely. This was the crucial time. Diving into the atmosphere at hypersonic speed, the shuttlecraft would briefly become a blazing meteor. The magnetic heat shield should hold the blistering ionized air safely away from the craft's hull. If it failed, the craft would break up, burn up, and plunge to a fiery impact on the surface, with Brad in it. Felicia watched the shuttlecraft's flight from the wall screens of the auditorium. More than half the staff was there, some sitting at the tables scattered across the floor, most of them standing. The screens showed the big green planet, and a tiny, thin streak of red racing across it. "That's Brad," she told herself. "That's his ship. He's in the midst of that burning hot air."
"He'll be all right."
Felicia whirled around to see Gregory Nyerere standing beside her, his eyes fixed on the screen. The overhead speakers were relaying the flight controller's calm, almost bored recitation. "Approaching maximum temperature. Max temperature. Max pressure. Conditions nominal."
"Nominal," Nyerere murmured. "Looks like the inside of hell to me."
The shuttlecraft was bouncing and shuddering so badly that Brad's vision blurred momentarily. The roaring outside the ship's skin was scary, like a monster trying to get inside and devour him. It wouldn't stop. Squinting at the clock display on the control panel, Brad saw that this had been going on for less than 2 minutes, but it seemed like an eternity of jouncing, shaking, bellowing, screeching as the inferno clasped him in its grip. He tasted blood in his mouth and realized he had bit the inside of his cheek. Thankful that he was firmly buckled into a seat, Brad squeezed his eyes shut. And the torment started to ease away. Opening his eyes, Brad saw the green surface of the planet hurtling up to greet him. "We're through entry," he exulted. "Going subsonic now." Gigantic trees were reaching up to snare him. A winding river flashed past.
"Initiating landing sequence," came the laconic voice of the flight controller.
On the display screen, the trees swept past, and Brad saw a broad swath of green meadow approaching. The shuttlecraft lurched, retro rockets, Brad knew. A roar of air told him that the landing gear had been extended. Then a bump, a thump, and he could feel the craft bouncing along on the grassy, uneven ground. It lurched to a stop. Everything became quiet.
"We're down," he called. "Copy you down, Dr. McDee. Everything looks good from here. All systems nominal."
Brad stared at the central display screen. He saw a meadow that looked almost like Earth, although there were no animals grazing on the grass. The sky was blue, with a few whitish puffs of clouds, but the blue seemed different, somehow off color. And there was a moon visible. "No, wait," Brad said to himself. "Gamma has no moon. That's Beta. It's approaching, coming nearer." Brad unbuckled his safety harness, whacked his head when he got up from the chair, and, cursing as he rubbed his forehead, started for the hatch. He was reaching for the hatch's handle when he remembered that he didn't have his helmet on.